So welcome all to the third class of on parents and children, different reading of the book of Genesis. 2 weeks ago, we started our series focusing on the story of creation, talking about combining Freud's psychosexual theory of development along with the story of creation, where we saw that the story of creation might be a mini model of the evolution of every and the development of every and each human creature. Last week was a very deep, or I would say for me was very hard, mentally difficult class, when we talked about Abraham, Yitzhak, and Ishmael. We talked about Abraham's relations with Ishmael when he thought he was supposed to be the promised son, and that he had to give up on Ishmael before he had to give up on Yitzhak, and that everyone thinks, you know, we usually think that Akedat Yitzhak, the binding of Isaac, is has a happy ending. But if you really read close the verses in the Psukim, we find out that it wasn't the case, actually. It wasn't the case. And Abraham lost everything. He lost, first of all, Ishmael at the beginning when he had to send him away. He lost Hagar. After he had to send her away, we thought maybe we gave an example that an opinion of Rashi that maybe he remarried Hagar later on. He lost Yitzhak because we know they went up together. We read the verses, the very intimate verses that says how closely and intimate was this experience when they went up the mountain, and how separate they went down from the mountain. That even though he went up with his child, something in his child, or in his, I would say, parenthood, in his fatherhood, something was lost up there in the mountain, and he went down by himself alone to a different place. And one partial later, we know that his wife Sarah passes away, and he lives in one place and she lives in a different place, and he goes to mourn her after she passes away. And from that specific story, after Sarah passes away, this is where we're going to start our class today. We're going to cover today a long story. I will finish something about Abraham and Sarah first, in our first part of the class. Then we were going to move to Yitzhak and Rivka, to Isaac and Rivka. We will meet Isaac and Yitzhak and Rivka again. For the first time, we'll try to see and analyze what are the characters of Yitzhak and Rivka when Abraham and Sarah are gone. Okay, how is the Torah describing our, I would say, encounter, our meeting with those two figures, with those two characters, the moment Abraham and Sarah are not around anymore. Okay, and this would be in our second class, and we'll try to give, to analyze, I would say, Yitzhak's character and Rivka's character in a sense, and try to see and offer a different understanding of their parenting, and in general, I would say, another perspective of their characters in Tanakh. So what do we have today? Today we have these sources, this booklet of sources. Only one. I send it away. I will send again in the chat, so you all gonna have it. I'm not, as usual, going to share the screen. I'm just gonna open it in a new tab if you want to. If you printed it out, it's very good, very well. I hope to be going to go through all the verses here. I hope so. We'll see for two reasons, if I will manage. First reason would be my voice and the situation I'm in right now. We'll see if I will be capable to read everything. And second of all, there is a lot of material going on. There is a lot of stuff I want to convey in this class. And, God will help. And if not, we will try and end everything at the beginning of next week's class before we move to talk about Jacob, about Yaakov. So today's class focusing Yitzhak and Rivka. But as I said, first of all, I want to open again where we stopped last week. And if you see, please take a look in your sources. I wrote down at the beginning of the sources, again, the two promises that God, the Kadosh Baruch Hu, promised Avraham Avinu throughout the Prakim, throughout the chapters in the Torah, where he talks and promises his promises. There were two promises. The first one, I gave only one instance. There's several instances for each one of them. I chose only two. First promise is a promise of offspring, of descendants. For I give all the land that you see to you and your offspring forever. Sorry, first of all would be the promise of the land. Avraham Avinu is being promised not only about offspring, right? As we will see in a second. This is number two. But the first promise Abraham is being promised is the promise of the land of Israel. Or back then, Eretz Canaan. Canaan was the land back then that Abraham Avinu got the promise from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, from God, that he will inherit and he will rule on this land. This is the first promise. And the second promise that we saw is, as I quoted here in the promise number two, I will bestow my blessing upon you and make your descendants as numerous as the stars of heaven and the sands on the seashore. So two promises Abraham Avinu got. First one was the promise of the land. Second one was the promise of of the offspring. And I have to tell you, because my email is open and my wife Priel just texted me that I locked her outside of the apartment. So please excuse me for 20 seconds. I will open the door and I will be back. Okay? So please, I'm sorry. And we're back on track. Yeah, this was a comedy break in our class. Okay, so what happens afterwards? Afterwards, we said Sarah passes away. And I want us to first read the story, the famous story of the burial of Sarah. All right, the burial of Sarah. We know that Abraham Avinu goes to what is called Me'arat HaMachpelah. Right, this is the cave of the Machpelah where he wants to buy it. From the Chittim, he wants to buy it. So, for some reason, presumably know this story. It's a very romantic one. That Abraham goes, he wants to bury. He said, no, I wanted to have a dedicated place to bury my wife. But actually, I want to offer that by going through the verses, verse after verse, maybe this is not a very romantic story, but rather maybe it's also romantic. I don't say it's not, but I think there's other intentions underneath beneath this story that Abraham is trying to convey. Let's read, all right? I'm calling it the first negotiation. I will explain why in a minute. So, let's see what he says. I am a resident alien among you. Sell me a burial site among you, says Abraham Avinu, that I may remove my dead of burial. Right? Abraham Avinu is asking to a place to bury Sarah. Let him sell the cave of Machpelah. I'm jumping to verse number 9. Let him sell the cave of Machpelah that he owns, which is at the edge of his land. Let him sell it to me, says Abraham, to the Chittim, to Ephron Hachiti, Ephron the Chittai. Sell it to me at the full price for a burial site in your midst. So Abraham Avinu is asking, actually going and negotiating with the Chittim. He asks, I want to, and it goes on and on. We can read all the psukim. We will jump to 19:20. But in general, he says, you know what? I want to bury my wife. Please sell it to me. Ephron, the head of this nation, of the Hittite nation, said, no, why? You're Avraham Avinu. You're famous. You're like, everyone knows you. Take it for free. No, pay nothing. But no, Avraham Avinu insists to pay for the place of the burial of Sarah. And he continues and he says, look in verse number 16. Abraham accepted Ephron's terms. Abraham paid out eventually to Ephron the money that he had named in the hearing of the Hittites, 400 shekels of silver at the going merchant's rate. And then Abraham buried his wife Sarah in the cave of the field of Machpelah, facing Mamre, now Hebron, in the land of Canaan. And I highlighted this verse. Thus the field went with its cave passed from the Hittites to Abraham as a burial site. Now I wanna raise a question. First question of this class I want to raise. Why do we need this story in the Torah? What's the meaning of this story? Now, I'm not the first one who's asking this question. The Parshanim, the commentators already asked, why do we need this story in general? So some say the reason is to show how the love that Abraham had towards his wife, and he wanted to assure that there is a very, I would say, a dedicated, valid, and proper place to bury her, and not only her, because he thought for the future, also for himself, for his descendants, and everyone else. Other Parshanim, other commentators say, no, you know what's the reason this is written down? So for now and ever, when everyone asks whether Hebron, Kiryat Arba, belongs to Israel, to the Jews, they can open the Bible, they can open the Tanakh, and they will show you here, you see, our ancestor, forefather Abraham, bought it with money, this belongs to us. And until now, I have to tell you in Israel, every Shabbos that we read this story, it's Parshat Chayei Sarah. This is a parsha. Every Shabbos of Chayei Sarah in Israel, groups, dozens of people, are going to Marat HaMachpelah, the Machpelah cave in Hebron, in Kiryat Arba, and they're spending the Shabbos with tents, with stuff like that, meals, singing, dancing, and everything else. They're celebrating their ownership on the Marat HaMachpelah. I want to offer a third way of understanding this story. I don't think this is a very romantic story, as again, as we saw, Abraham and Sarah were separated after what happened in the binding of Isaac. Not only that, we know that some say, as Rashi, that Sarah passed away the moment she heard that Abraham took her son and went to slaughter him on the mountain. Okay? I have, as a human being, I have a difficult time reading this story, the romantic story, after the catastrophe that just happened between them. Okay? I want to offer that by doing that, and that's not for no reason, I highlighted the last verse here, that this all was the purpose, intention of Abraham Avinu to make sure that the first promise is being fulfilled. The first promise of the land. Until now, Abraham Avinu was passive. He didn't act to ensure that the promises he received from God actually are going to take place. We talked about it last week. We said that Abraham Avinu was promised over and over and over again promises about offspring. But then he complained to God and said, but God, they have no offspring. So God gave him Ishmael and then Yitzchak. But now, when he lost Ishmael and he lost Yitzchak, and he lost his wife, he sees that, we will read in a minute, that he's becoming old. He sees that not even one promise of the promises God promised to him has actually been fulfilled. So this is the first time Abraham Avinu is negotiating actively with someone, with a Gentile in Eretz Canaan, to buy, and insists to buy the land, so he can have a footprint on the land of Israel, so he can know that at least something of the land of Israel now is being owned by him. This is an insurance of that the first promise, the promise of the land, will actually be fulfilled. This is my suggestion on that case. Any questions? Okay, very good. This is the first time. That's why I think, in general, that this story is going to be here. Yes, Bonita.
I like also that he paid full price without haggling, so that he doesn't owe anything. So people can't say, oh, we gave it to him cheaper or anything like that.
Exactly. It wasn't a gift, it wasn't a complimentary, it was an acquisition, a proper one. He is the owner of Marat HaMachpelah. He is now, for the first time, the owner of a piece of the land of Israel. For the first time, only now. Vanessa, you have a question? You're muted, Vanessa.
I would suggest that this speaks to the character of Abraham, that he is a mensch, always being a mensch, that he didn't want this for free. He didn't want it on sale. He wanted to be treated just like everybody else.
Excuse me. Okay. I hear what you said. He was a mensch. I have a... I'm not sure what exactly the definition of a mensch is. I'm not exactly sure what a mensch is.
A man of good care.
I would ask, where was this mensch when he took Yitzchak from Sarah and went to slaughter him on the mountain? That's my question only. Okay, where was this mensch back then? I think his character is difficult. I think his character is complex. And I think there is, again, we can read it as a romantic story, as a mensch. I don't think it contrasts what I'm trying to convey. But I do think that if we continue what we spoke about last week, I think that Avraham Avinu is actively trying, and not, this is only for the first promise. We'll see another thing that he's doing now for the second promise. He's trying to negotiate in order to have, for the first time, actively own a land in Israel in order to see that the first promise is being fulfilled. All right? This is for this part. Now let's see one verse after what happens when we move to chapter 24. For some reason, the Torah tells us, opens the chapter while saying, Abraham was now old, advanced in years, and God had blessed Abraham in all things. What is this pasuk? What is this verse? Abraham was now old? Who else in the Tanakh? We know that the Tanakh, the Bible, is calling old. Who else we know that? Let's see. This is a quiz, a Bible quiz. Who else in the Bible is being, we're being told that he is old? You know?
Jacob.
Excuse me?
Jacob.
No. David. David.
Yes, David.
King David. Yes. King David, right? In Shmuel Bet, King David in Shmuel Bet, excuse me, in the beginning of Melachim Aleph, in Kings 1, he's being told, we know that Zaken, that he's Zaken, he's an old, and then he needs Avishag HaShunamit, Avishag, to come and cover him and warm him up, right? We know this story. But back then, and I have an entire class that we'll do sometime, we'll talk about prophets and about those very interesting stories. Also there and also here. He's not really old. Abraham is going not to die now. He has plenty of years ahead of him. Not only that, we will be told, we saw last week, he's going to be remarried and give birth for 5 more children. This is not an old person. He's ready to die. He still has plans in his head that he wants to fulfill. So why would the Torah tell us that he's old? What does it mean that he's old? I want to say that this is a mental situation. He felt old. He wasn't physically old. After everything that he has gone through, he felt old. After everything, he wasn't old. He wasn't going to die a few days later. But he felt old. And I want to say more than that. I want to say that we need to know what was his internal situation in order for us to understand his actions. Now we understand why he's trying to act and to ensure that the promises are actually going to be fulfilled. Because he feels old. He feels, okay, I have to do something. I'm going to die soon. He didn't die soon, but he felt, I'm going to die soon. I've been through enough. I need to make sure that the promises that I received from God actually are going to be fulfilled. So the first thing he's doing is to make sure that he owns the land of Israel. And the second thing is, make sure that Yitzchak is going to be married. He's taking responsibility to search for Yitzchak, for Isaac, a wife. All right? Those are the two active things that he's doing. First of all, making sure that he owns the land. Second of all, making sure that Yitzchak is going to be married. Why? Because this is the only way for him that the second promise of the offspring will take place and will be fulfilled. Those are the two things that he's doing. Two negotiations. We will see there is another negotiation when they're looking for a woman, for a wife, for Rivka, for Yitzchak. But Abraham is active, and we're being told he felt old because now he said, I have to act, as if I don't act now, I have nothing to lie on. Okay? Let's continue. And Abraham, I'm reading in verse 2 to 4. And Abraham said to the senior servant of his household, who had charge of all that he owned, put your hand under my thigh, and I will make you swear by God, the God of heaven and the God of the earth. Which is interesting, are there two gods? What exactly is this? Put that aside. The God of heaven and the God of earth. That you will not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites, among whom I dwell, but will go to the land of my birth and get a wife for my son Isaac. This is a very, I would say, demanding, first time we see Abraham's, demanding character. All right, so far he was only passive and controlled by many other people. Sarah, God, for the first time he's saying, you know what? I'm demanding you go and do so. He's the master. And he continues and he says, and the servant said to him, what if the woman does not consent to follow me to this land? Shall I then take your son back to the land from which you came? And Abraham answered him, oh no, account must you take my son back there. For no reason. I want that the blessing will take place, and the blessing has to be from the proper group. Because if he's going to be married from someone else, I'm not going to have the fulfillment, the promise of the offspring would not be fulfilled. Read that in those lens, in these glasses. God, I'm reading in verse 7, God, the God of heaven, who took me from my father's house and from my native land, and look what he says, who promised on oath, saying, I will assign this land to your offspring. He's saying that he has the promises from God, the land and the offspring. He has the two promises. He's saying that when he sends away his servant, Eliezer, we'll send a messenger before you, and you will get a wife for my son from there. Very clear, no questioning at all. He needs to go and get a wife for Yitzchak after he already get Abraham got ownership on the land. And now we get to the first time we meet Rivka. And I want to say something before we dive into Rivka. We need to understand something. When we talk about our patriarchs and our matriarchs, we sometimes forget something. Patriarchs, our forefathers, our avot, they received their title of being a forefather, a patriarch, by what? By inheritance. Because they were born to their father, who was also a patriarch, right? Abraham gave birth to Isaac, who gave birth to Jacob. When we talk about the matriarchs, this is not the case. The matriarchs, our mothers, are external. They were brought to the family from the outside. They're not the daughters of forefathers or daughters of matriarchs. They came from different families. Think like today, if one of the princes in Britain is going to marry someone else from a different group, not part of, it's difficult. It's a difficult situation because they had what is called a status. They had a place, and if you're going to be married with someone else, you need to bring someone who's worthy, someone who can get into this family and become a matriarch. It's difficult. Sometimes we think, oh, Abraham and Sarah, right, Rivka, and Yitzchak, it's not the same. The matriarchs, and it's going to be very, very, I would say, very critical when we talk about Jacob next week, when we talk about his two wives, when he had two wives and two mates and two mistresses. Okay, well, we're going to talk about that. We will see that this is very, very, this is a very difficult thing with the connection that's, between all of the women, all of the wives. We need to make sure that we know that. Yes, Linda. You're muted.
But they did come from Abraham's family.
Of course. First of all, we need to understand there weren't so many people back then on Earth in general. You could find their family relations very close, but yes, they came from Abraham's family. And please put that comment in your mind, because we will meet it towards the end of our class. Thank you, Linda, for that. Okay, so let's see what is our first encounter with Rivka. We don't know her name is Rivka yet. Again, we're reading it like we don't know what's going to happen. Remember that. Okay, this is the way we analyze the text. Let's see. So in verse number 14, let the maiden to whom I say, this is a servant. The servant went and he said, I have a test. The woman who's going to succeed in this test, she deserves to be the wife to Isaac. And he says, let the maiden to whom I say, please lower your jar that I may drink. And who replies, drink. And I will also water your camels. This is his test, the servant's test. The woman who says so, let her be the one whom you have decreed for your servant Isaac. Thereby shall I know that you have dealt graciously with my master. And it continues and it says, Richa, I'll give it in a minute, okay? Please put it aside. We'll have in a minute time for questions. And it continues and it says, he had scarcely finished speaking. While he almost didn't finish. When Rivka, I will say not Rebecca, I will say Rivka in that case, who was born to Bethuel, the son of Milcah, the wife of Abraham's brother Nahor, came out with her jar on her shoulder. First of all, what is the first thing we know about Rivka? Her what? Her ichus, her family. Who are her parents? First of all, again, as I said, she needs to be a matriarch. We need to understand the importance of the family she comes from. The girl that you're going to see now, she's coming from a very well-known family. Although they're not that, they're coming from Abraham's family, right? We know that. And we know she came out with her jar on her shoulder. The maiden was very beautiful, says the Torah, which is very important for us to know. Again, the maiden was very beautiful and a virgin. Another important detail for us to know. She went down to the spring, filled her jar, and came up. Why is it important for us? Keep that in mind. The servant ran towards her and said, please, let me sip a little water from your jar. And she replied, drink, my lord, she said. And she quickly lowered her jar upon her hand and let him drink. When she had let him drink his fill, she said, I will also draw for your camels until they finish drinking. She quickly emptied her jar into the trough, and ran back to the well to draw, and she drew for all this camel. The man, meanwhile, stood gazing at her, silently wondering whether God has made his errand successful or not. This is almost like from Disney. Almost like a Disney magical story. Now, this is our third class in this series. I expect from you now to know where I'm heading. Look, please, on the words that are highlighted. What insight can you tell me only by the words that are highlighted from those verses? What can we understand about Rivka?
That Rachel, she is active, she is doing, she is, you know, like he asked expects to see something and is actually seeing it by the way she's doing it.
She's, thank you, Claudette, she's coming out, she's coming down, she feels, she comes up, she says, she quickly lowers, she lets him again, she says, she draws, she quickly empties, she runs back, she draws so many verbs in so little amount of, so small amount of verses of sukkim. We saw that when we, in our first class, when the Torah is mentioning many verbs in a small section, in a small scope of verses, this means they're trying, she's trying to convey something. We are meeting here a young, active, I would say very very active young woman here. Okay? She's not only in a nichus, she's not only beautiful and a virgin, she's also very active. She's going, she's doing quickly. Look, the verb quickly is, why do we need to know it was quickly? Why do I need to know that? Why is it important to the story? It is important to know that she is very active. She has a temper. And we'll see it in a minute. Rivka is one of the most interesting, I would say, female characters in the entire Tanakh. She's very interesting because she is a woman with a temper. And we'll see it in a minute why. And put it in your mind, because when we're going to meet Yitzchak, try to compare Rivka's character to Yitzchak's character in that sense. And we'll continue. The man, we said, Minua stood gazing at her. Think about the contrast between him and her. He's like standing totally shocked. Totally shocked about this young, active woman who's doing many, he's like standing and says, is that her that I'm supposed to bring back home to my master? He stood gazing silently. Those are the three verses that are actually a contrast, one by one contrast to what she is doing. He's standing, she's running, she's talking, he's silent. She's moving and he's gazing. Think about the compare and contrast in the verses between him and her. She's very active. The maiden ran, and when she came back home with him, I mean, verse number 27, the maiden ran and told all this to her mother's household. She runs. Everyone are running. Running, he runs, she runs. Now Rebecca had a brother whose name was Laban. Laban ran out to the men at the spring. One verse later, not only she's active, she comes from a family that everyone is so active. She's running, her brother is running. They're all very excited. We need to understand that. Not for no reason, everyone are running here. There is, I would say, this vibe. There is this subtext from the story that Rivka is coming from a very active family in a very active place, and not for no reasons. Okay, Ricky, do you have a question?
Yes. If Rivka's family, if Avram's brother's family, they were not Canaanim, they were not, what were they? They weren't Jews, no such thing at the time. What were they?
Okay, back then, you were belonged to the family you were. Jews were not a thing back then. Jews is something very later on. Okay, we need to understand that. But the family you were born to means to what identity you belong to. So when he tells them, go and bring someone from my family, that means they're affiliating to the same group.
I understand.
There's no word, there's no name for that group, in a sense. I don't know.
They were from Mesopotamia.
Yeah, Mesopotamia was was the bigger area back then with many other nations. But that group of Abraham's family, you can call them Abraham's sons or Abraham's family. There's no group. But again, your identity was affiliated with the family you belonged to back then. Also, very similar to how it's today with the Arabs. Very similar.
I don't get it. The people who lived in the land, they were Canaanim, there were other people. So they were just outsiders?
Right, there were other nations. Yes, there were other nations. But he told them, go and bring someone from my family. Think a little bit like the Arabs today. They live in their families, in their tribe. Think about like that. You affiliate to the group you were born to, and your cousins, your aunts, your the sons of your cousins. This is the group you belong to. Okay?
Thanks, Claudette. Thank you, Claudette.
Claudette, this is a short question before we move on.
Yes. Lake Leka, in Parsha Lake Leka, has the origin of where Abraham and his family came.
We have only the name of Ur Kasdim. This is the only place we know. We know nothing about Abraham except of that. Only the city that they came from in the area of Iraq, of modern Iraq. That's what we know.
Today, Iraq.
Right.
Yes.
Right. That's what we know. Okay. So let's see what happens later. We jump all the way to verse 53. The servant brought out objects of silver and gold and garments and gave them to Rivka, and he gave presents to her brothers and her mother. Where is the father? Put that aside. Where's the father? Where's the brother, mother, and Rivka? Where's the father? Then he had encouraged. He and the entourage under him ate and drank, and they spent the night. When they arose next morning, he said, "Give me leave to go to my master." But look what happens. But her brother Lavan, you see that he is way more, has a role in the family more than who? More than the father. Think about it. The father is absent, but we have the brother. Okay? The brother here has a very special role, a very important role. But the brother, but her brother and her mother said, "Let the maiden remain with us some 10 days, then you may go." He said to them, "Do not delay me. Now that God has made my errand successful, give me leave that I may go to my master." This is a negotiation. If we first saw, folks, a negotiation between Abraham and Ephron on the cave of Machpelah, this is a second negotiation by the servant of Abraham in his name, ensuring that there is a wife to Yitzchak, so the second promise of the offspring would be fulfilled. There's two negotiations in the stories of Abraham, one in Maarat al-Machpelah, second with Rivka and Lavan. And they said, look what they're saying. The only place in the Torah, in the Tanakh, maybe Esther is a little bit different. Look at this, think about it, 57. And they said, "Let us call the girl and ask for her reply." Now, again, you need to be shocked. You need to be shocked. She should not have an opinion back then. Girls in that age and women in general should not have opinions. And even if they had opinions, it doesn't matter what their opinions were. But they're saying no, the father is absent. The father is absent, and the young, active woman of temper is being called to say, "What is your opinion? Do you want to go with this man or not?" Now, this tells us what? This tells us that Rivka is not an average, regular woman. She's not an average, regular woman. She's different. She has a temper. She has a character. And this character will take place not only here, throughout her life, in every story that we will meet here. From her, from now, until the last story, where she folds up Yitzchak, when she wants to change the blessings between Esav and Yaakov, we will see in a minute. Think that in mind. Think what you know is going to happen next with Rivka. She is a woman with a character. They called Rivka and said to her, "Will you go with this man?" And she said, "I will." Now this is "I will," very romantic. "I will, will you? I will." And she goes with the servant. Okay, this is about Rivka and her first encounter with her very interesting character. Now we get to a very critical step. We're right in our middle of our class. Now we get to the most critical part of our class. Why? Because now we're in the core of the changing of the generations between Abraham and Sarah to Yitzchak and Rivka. Look how the Torah explains that there was a change in the generations. Then Rivka and her maids arose, mounted the camels, and followed the man. So the servant took Rivka and went his way. Isaac, now think like there is a show, okay, in Broadway. There's two stages. One stage, spotlight on Rivka. The other stage, spotlight on Isaac. Both, the Torah actually think like it's a script. We have two spotlights in two different places, and we'll see what's happening in between. All right, try to compare and contrast the two spotlights, the two scenes. Isaac had just come back from the vicinity of Be'er Lechai Ro'i. Remember Be'er Lechai Ro'i? This is where Ishmael had, we talked about last week, came back from Be'er Lechai Ro'i, for he was settled in the region of the Negev. And Isaac went out Lasuach. What is this word Lasuach? I specifically wrote the in Hebrew and not the translation, because the translation is interpretation. What does it mean Lasuach? Commentators say different things. Some say Lasuach is to pray. Sicha is tefillah. Rashi says, he went out to daven mencha, outside in the field. I want to offer a different understanding of what Lasuach means. Let's see. And Isaac went out Lasuach, to do whatever that is, in the field toward evening. Think about the scene, birds, butterflies, sunset. Looking up, he saw camels approaching. Raising her eyes, now we move to the other scene. Raising her eyes, he looked up, she raised her eyes also. Rivka saw Isaac. Their eyes encounter each other. She alighted from, she does fall through, she alighted from the camel. And said to the servant, "Who is that man walking in the field toward us?" And the servant said, "That is my master. This is Yitzchak." So she took her veil and covered herself. Isaac then brought her into the tent of his mother, Sarah. This is where we meet Sarah again after she passed away. Again, Isaac then brought her into the tent of his mother, Sarah, and he took Rivka as his wife. Isaac loved her and thus found comfort after his mother's death. This is one of the most beautiful verses in the Bible, in the Tanakh. Why? Look at the colors that I colored it. This verse I learned from my Tanakh teacher in Yeshiva, Chezi Cohen. He said this verse had three different parts. First part is the red part, where we talk about Sarah. This part is also the last part. The third one is also talking about Sarah. In between, there is Rivka. Rivka is entering where? Entering Sarah's tent. This is not for no reason. She is replacing Sarah in the eyes of Yitzchak. Rivka is by that, I think it's like the crowning. Rivka is now getting the character, the role of the matriarch of Bnei Israel. By this romantic, beautiful pasuk, he takes her, brings her into the tent of his mother. Where is his father? Where is Abraham? Again, they were separated. They were not in the same place. He brought her into the tent of his mother. He loves her. He marries her. And thus, says the Torah, he found comfort after his mother's death. Only when he found Rivka, only when he loved her, and now he said, okay, I can let it go. I can let my mourning and my grief go. And I want to offer that lasuach means also to mourn. And there are other psukim in the Torah that we can see in the Tanakh that siach, lasuach, means to mourn, means something that says to express grief. Very deep grief. I want to offer, based on Mori Rabbi Rabbi Chezi Cohen, that Yitzchak went out to mourn his mother. We're still after Sarah passed away, still fresh in his eyes. He went to mourn, he saw her, he brought her into the tent, and then he could let it go. And now, we finish with Sarah in the Tanakh. The role of Sarah ended only now. Not when she passed away, only now. From now on, Sarah's out, Rivka's in. Alright? Very good. Now let's see who Yitzchak is. Let's see who is Yitzchak. Who's Yitzchak? Who's Isaac? 25:19. This is a very, very difficult story. This is, the Torah says, this is the story of Isaac, son of Abraham. Abraham begot Isaac. Very clear. Why do we need this? Because if you thought that maybe Yitzchak is not, maybe it's only Sarah's son, and not, some of you asked it last week, maybe Yitzchak is only Sarah's son, not Abraham's son. Maybe Abraham's son was Ishmael. No, Yitzchak is Abraham's son. Abraham is Yitzchak's father. Don't mistake. And the Torah starts, this is the story of Isaac. Okay, what's the story of Isaac? Let's see, what do we know about Isaac? What is his story? Verse 20, Isaac was 40 years old when he took to wife Rivka, daughter of Bethuel the Aramean of Padam Aram, sister of Laban the Aramean. Isaac pleaded with God on behalf of his wife because she was barren, and God responded to her, to his plea, and his wife Rebekah conceived. Wait. This is rushing away. Wait, what's the story of Isaac? You're now talking to me about what happened with his wife, and she could not give children. What's the story of Isaac? Where is the story? Folks, Isaac has no story. Isaac is not a character, and I want to, this is one of the goals of this class. Isaac, in the Torah, is not a character that stands by himself. Isaac has nothing to do all by himself. Everything that happens to Isaac is always putting him in the shadow of someone else. To be it, call it Rivka, call it Esav and Yaakov, which are coming now, we will see them. Call it his father Abraham. Everything that happens to Yitzchak happens in the shadow of someone else, usually bigger than him. He's all the time not the main character of the story. Now we think about Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. They were not the same. Abraham was the main character in his stories. But I want to say, and we will see it now, that if we move to the generation of Yitzchak and Rivka, Yitzchak is not the main character. Rather, whom is the main character? Rivka. Rivka is the main character in the relations between Yitzchak and Rivka. Not only how we saw her, this temper character, very active woman, which is going to be a very, I would say, contrast to the simplicity, passive character of Isaac. Someone asked me last week, maybe this character of Isaac is a consequence of the stories that happened to him. I'm not a psychologist. And again, I said, I don't think we can try to analyze the characters in a psychologist way. I don't think it's fair. But we have what we have, and this is our verses in the Torah. And we can see by the verses, try to analyze the characters by that and try to get a sense, a hint of what happened back then. So guys, there is no story to Isaac. The first thing that we are being told is that he married Rivka. And again, we move to talk about Rivka. Rivka didn't have children. They both prayed together. Again, not only him, she pray also. Look, she's active. She has a role here. It's not everything up to him. She's here also. And she was conceived. Okay, now compare it to Abraham's story when his wife could not bear children. And I don't want to get to the question why all our matriarchs had problems giving birth. We'll talk about it next week, Bezrat Hashem. But compare the story. When Sarah could not give children, Abraham waited again and again and again and again. And then he asked God, please give her birth. And then Ishmael was born, and not Yitzchak. Yaakov, Yitzchak is not waiting. When his wife cannot give children, she's praying. She's not waiting to any God to get to tell her what to do or to wait. She wants a child, she will pray for a child. And he will pray after her. And how do I know that she is the one who said, let's pray, and not Yitzchak? How do I know this is an idea of her and not of his? Because look what happens after her, afterwards, in verse number 22. But the children struggled in her womb, and she said, Isaac is absent from here. She said, if so, why do I exist? She went to inquire of God. Isaac is absent from the story that his wife could not bear children. She is the main character. She is active. She's asking, she's going to talk to God and ask him, why don't I have children? Why is this, the children are fighting in my womb? Isaac is not asking it. She's asking it. So if Abraham was active and Sarah was passive, now when we change the generations, Isaac is passive and Rivka is active. And Rivka is the main character in this partnership, in this relations. And it continues. And God answered her. Not to him, not to they, to her. There is a relation between God and Rivka that Isaac is not part of. Think about it. There is this relation. God, Rivka, and Isaac is not here. Two nations are in your womb. Two separate peoples shall issue from your body. One people shall be mightier than the other, and the older shall serve the younger. Look, where is Isaac? We just said the story of Isaac. We're only talking about Rivka. When her time to give birth was at hand, there were twins in her womb. The first one emerged red, like a hairy mantle all over. So they named him Esav. Then his brother emerged, holding on to the heel of Esav. So they named him Jacob. Isaac was 6 years old when they were born. The only thing we know about Isaac in the story of the birth of his children, that how old was he? That's the only thing we know. This comes as a compare and contrast tool to Rivka. Okay, again, we're working with the text. We're analyzing the text and the references to see who is the main character in the story. Isaac has no story by himself. And then, quickly as it is, not talking about Isaac, not talking also about Rivka. We're moving fast forward. When the boys grew up. Wait. Abraham Avinu, most of the stories in his life took place before he even had one child. Where is Isaac? Isaac has no stories. Nothing. What? Tell me something about it. I want to know something about nothing. There is no story about Isaac before his children are growing up. Something. This screams, compare me to my father's stories. Not for no reason, Yitzchak is so different than his father. And it says, when the boys grew up, Esau became a skillful hunter, a man of the outdoors, but Jacob became a mild man, raising livestock. Then his brother emerged, holding on the heel of Esau. So they named him we saw that. That's the same passage because it's in 26. Okay. This is the beginning of the story. If it's like this is very difficult, very challenging, but yet I think there's many insights that we can all learn from that section. And I want to continue before there's more time for questions. We have a lot of ahead of us, but we'll try to do as much as we can. So what is the only story that we are being told about Yitzchak in the Torah? What is the only story that there is? Because there is one story that we are still being told that Yitzchak is doing by himself and is not only in the shadow of someone else. one story in the entire Bible. And the story is, look what it says. Verse 26, chapter 26, verse number 1. There was a famine in the land, aside from the previous famine that had occurred in the days of Abraham. Even what the Tanakh is trying to say, there was a famine in the days of Isaac, he still needs to say, oh, but this famine is another one to what happened to his father. Even Isaac is not entitled to a famine written only by him, only on his name. He's still compared to the famine of his father. And Isaac went to Avimelech, king of Philistines, in Gerar. Is that reminding you something? Those names, Avimelech, famine, Egypt, Gerar, they remind you something that you know of? Those names, Avimelech, Gerar? Folks, I want to say, everything in the only story that is being told or being written about Yitzchak happened one by one to his father Abraham. Even the only story that we are being told about Isaac himself is not original. Even that story has roots one by one. Look at the table, we'll go through it. Roots one by one in his father's life. Look, in verse 2, God had appeared to him and said, do not go down to Egypt, stay in the land which I point you out. And look what happens. Verse number 6, he compared it. So Isaac stayed in Gerar, in Abraham's life. Abraham journeyed from there while he stayed in Gerar, the same place. They both stayed in Gerar. Verse 7, in Isaac, when the local leaders asked him about his wife, he said, she is my sister. And look at Abraham's. Abraham said to Sarah, his wife, she is my sister. Same things happens to both of them. Verse 10, Avimelech said, what have you done to us? One of the men might have lain with your wife and you would have brought guilt upon us. Is it from Isaac? Look what happened in Abraham's life. Then Avimelech summoned Abraham and said to him, what have you done to us? Same words from the same guy. That's not for no reason. Compare and contrast Abraham and Isaac. The only story that is being told about Isaac is the famine. But every and each part, any rich detail in his story happens to his father. This child, Isaac, is never mentioned by his own. He's always in the shadow of someone else. And it continues, verse 16. And Avimelech said to Isaac, go away from us, for you have become far too big for us. But compare and contrast it to Abraham. And Avimelech said to Abraham, here my land is before you, settle wherever you please. Now it's not the same thing. But for Abraham, he said, please sit here. For Isaac, he said, go away, we don't want you. This is another compare and contrast. It continues. Isaac dug and knew the wells which had been dug in the days of his father Abraham. The only thing that Isaac is doing new is to dig new wells. And he's not digging new wells. He's only reopening the wells that his father has dug. Even that thing is not new and not original by himself. He is coming, repeating everything that happened to his father's life, in a sense. And it continues. In Isaac, we're being told, the herdsmen of Gerar quarreled with Isaac's herdsmen, saying, the water is ours. There is a fight between the herdsmen. Look what happened in Abraham's life. And there was quarreling between the herders of Abraham's cattle and those of Lot's cattle. Same stories. And the last one, he named this place that he went to with the oath, Sheba. Therefore, the name of the city is Beersheba to this day. And in Abraham, it says, he replied, you are to accept this 7 ewes from me as proof that I dug this well. Hence, that place was called Beersheba, for there were 2 of them, swore an oath. Same story, same place, same character. Only Abraham now is gone and Isaac isn't. Isaac, folks, never stands by himself. He's not a character that has a story that you can say, this is Isaac. Isaac, and not for no reason, I want to offer that Isaac is not the main character. The main character is Rivka, not Isaac. Rivka is the main character in the second generation. Rivka is the active young woman. Rivka is the one who's being asked for her opinion. Rivka is the one who we will see. She fools Yitzchak, who is blinded and old. Not Yitzchak. Yitzchak is not the ultimate successor. He only serves as a middleman between Abraham and Jacob. Between those two giants, because we will see next week when we talk about Jacob. When we talk about Jacob, we will see Jacob is a giant. Jacob is almost like Abraham with the stories and everything, he's very active. We'll talk about him. But in between those two giants, there is this Isaac, who is very passive, who has done not many much. We're not being told, at least we're told what we have in front of us. Not a lot of stories that he has done in his lifetime. And we have Rivka in that sense. And because we have only 8 minutes, if that's fine with you, I will exceed in like 2-3 minutes of our time, because I do want to finish it with the last story of Rivka and Yitzhak. If you really need to rush and to go, then I won't be offended. That's fine. You can leave the meeting. I will exceed in a couple of minutes of our class. Excuse me for that. What happened at the end of the stories of Rivka and Yitzhak? What is the last thing that we know about Yitzhak and Rivka? Let's read the story. Let's read this epilogue. In chapter 27, when Isaac was old, remember this was old, right? When Isaac was old and his eyes were too dim to see, he called his older son Esav and said to him, "My son," he answered, "here I am." And he said, "I'm old now and I do not know how soon I may die." Now what is the answer? You would think, oh, he's old, he's going to die soon. Folks, Yitzhak lived for 35, 37 more years afterwards. We're being told that he's not old. Maybe he thinks he's going to die. Maybe he's blinded. But Ramban says, that one of the biggest commentators on Torah, this is mentally being blinded. He is passive. He don't see what happens in his own household. He loves Esav and not Jacob. He prefers the bad son, not the good son. In a sense, he doesn't understand. He doesn't control his own household. He doesn't control his own sons. But we will talk about Yaakov and Esav next week. And he can't control also his wife in hell. How do I know that? Because look, he is not the main character. His wife is. Rivka in verse 5. Again, the spotlight moves to his wife. Rivka had been listening. As Isaac spoke to his son Esav, she listens to what he's talking to his son. She is the one who wears the pants at home. When Esav had gone out into the open to hunt game to bring home, he continues, Rivka said to her son Jacob, she is active. He's blinded, he's old, she's active, she's young, she's controlling the house. She said to her son Jacob, I overheard your father speaking to your brother Esav, saying she wants to give him the blessing, the bracha, and everything. We know the story. And I jump, now my son, listen carefully as I instruct you. Try to compare it to Yitzhak. Try to compare it how passive and blinded he is and how active and how open her eyes are. She instructs, she listens, she sees, she's managing the situation. Verse 9-10, go to the flock and fetch me 2 choice kids, and I will make of them a dish for your father, such as he likes. Then take it to your father to eat, in order that he may bless you before he dies. Look what happens to this temper young woman, which went and she went and she brought water and she took. She's still active. She's still saying, go, he can bless you. I'll take it. Give it to him. I'm instructing you. Again, the verbs. I didn't highlight them, but again, many verbs. Still, again, when she's older now. That's the same character of the woman we met at the beginning. Jacob answered his mother Rivka, and we'll talk about this verse next week. But my brother Esav is a hairy man, and I am smooth skin. If my father touches me, I shall appear to him as a trickster, and bring upon myself a curse, not a blessing. We'll talk about it next week. But his mother said to him again, Isaac is absent from here. His mother said to him, your curse, my son, be upon me. Look at her temper. Look at her character. She said, your curse gonna be upon me. Just do as they say and go fetch them for me. Who said at the beginning of her class, go do as I say? Who said this sentence? Not Sarah. Abraham said it to his servant Eliezer. We saw that Abraham said, go do everything that I say. Don't change from what I'm saying. The successor, the real successor of Abraham's character is not Yitzhak, is Rivka. Rivka is taking the place of Abraham in that family. And she is ruling the family and she's leading it. He got them And I'm reading in verse 14, he got them and brought them to his mother, and his mother prepared a dish such as his father liked. Again, think about she prepared, he liked. Think about the mother, the father here. Rivka then took the best clothes of her older son Esav, which were there in the house, and had her younger son Jacob. Older son Esav, younger son Jacob. We'll talk about it next week, but there's a problem. Because Jacob bought. He bought the Bechorah from Esav. He's now, of course, the biology that Esav is older. But now Jacob's supposed to be older than Esav. Why would the Torah say that Esav is older than Yaakov? I want to say that this story of Rivka fooling Yitzchak has two layers. The first layer is Rivka's active character and how she controlled everything in her household. But second, I want to suggest that this story is a negative story in the Torah. I want to suggest that the Torah tells this story of Rivka fooling, using her son to fool Yitzchak, is a negative story in the Torah. How do I know that? Not only because of this story that she fooled the father, which is blinded. Maybe he was blinded, okay? But he was mentally blinded. She's taking advantage of it. We know, we have in halacha, says, Lifnei iver lo titen michshol, before a blinded person, you should not put any obstacle. But she's doing it anyway, okay? And the Torah says, still, after what happened between Esav and Jacob, that Jacob bought the Bechorah, the birthright from Esav, still Esav is the older son, and Jacob is the younger son. Put them on, and she covered his hands and the hairless part of his neck with the skins of the kids. Then she put in his hand of her son Jacob the dish and the bread that she had prepared. 41, after everything that happened, he receives the blessing. Yitzchak doesn't know from what happened, how exactly, who fooled him, what exactly is going on here. But her plan worked. She succeeded in fooling her husband. She succeeded in receiving for her son Jacob the bracha, the blessing. Now Esav harbored a grudge against Jacob because of the blessing which his father had given him. And Esav said to himself, let but the mourning period of my father come, and I will kill my brother Jacob. But his father is still alive. He says, not like my brother who is the son of my mom. He's Yelet Shel Ima, as we say in English. He's mommy's child. I'm my dad's child. I will wait until my father passes away. I will wait until I finish mourning him. Only then I will go and kill my brother. Remember that for next week. We will see those verses. When the words of her older son Esav were reported to Rebekah. Who reported it to Rebekah? Who said that to Rivka? What did they mean by reported to Rivka? She listens. She listens to her father, to her husband. She listens to his church. She listens to everyone that is going in her household. She knows everything. No one can hide something from Rivka in that house. There's no privacy. She hears everything. When that was reported to Rivka, she sent for her younger son Jacob and said to him, your brother Esav is consoling himself by planning to kill you. Now, my son, listen to me. Flee at once to Haran, to my brother Laban. Stay with him a while until your brother's fury subsides, until your brother's anger against you subsides, and he forgets what you have done to him. You have done to him. No, that's not him. That's you that have done to him. That's not Jacob. It wasn't his plan. That wasn't his plan. That was Rivka's plan. Then I will fetch you from there. Let me not lose you both in one day. Rivka said to Isaac, I am disgusted with my life. Wait, before we move to that one, what do we see from this verse 42 to 45? We can see from those verses, Rivka, he said, one second, Ricky. Rivka is sending her son where? Back to her, back to the family we just saw of Lavan. Remember this active family, Lavan, who fooled Eliezer. Rashi said that he came out and hugged Eliezer and kissed him in the neck in order to check. Maybe he brought some more gold, which he hides in his throat. Her family is an active family, but her family, we should not be surprised that Rivka is acting in such a way. We know the family she comes from. We just said at the beginning that the matriarchs are not part of the sequence of the family. They're not the daughters of their mothers. They're brought from the outside, and therefore there is an external influence on the household. And Rivka, as a control woman in this family, she brings the influence of the family, of the household she was born in, she grew up in, to this house. And we know her father and her brother, the entire family, is wicked. They fooled everyone. Lavan is, we will see next week that Yaakov is working in Lavan's house for Rachel. And then what he does, he switches Rachel on that. He is a wicked person, her brother. But she says, she tells him, go back to my brother. She married Yitzchak. She married into Abraham's family, but she is still part of the family she came from. And she still sends her son back to the family she came from. And we should not be surprised that this is the last sentence that she says in the entire Tanakh. This very active woman, Rivka, we don't even know when she passed away and what happened to her afterwards. The last words of Rivka are, so Isaac, Rivka said to Isaac, after this, after what happened, Rivka said to Isaac, I am disgusted with my life because of the Chiti woman. If Jacob marries a Chiti woman like this, from among the native woman, what good will life be to me? Question mark. The woman who questioned her life because she, her kids were fighting in her womb, is she's questioning her life again, now to Isaac. And I'm saying that she's fooling Isaac again, so there is an excuse, so Isaac can tell Jacob, run away. So it's not gonna come from her, it's gonna come from Isaac, although this is Rivka's idea. And those are the last words of Rivka in the Tanakh. After this, Rivka's character disappears. We don't know what happened. We don't know when she passed away. We don't know when she died. She came in such a storm into Abraham's life and into Yitzchak's life. And she lives very quietly without even knowing what's going to happen. Not only that, but the story, the first story that the Torah is telling us right after this, is how Lavan is fooling Jacob when Jacob wants to marry Rachel. In other words, the Torah is saying, you should not be surprised this is the way Rachel acted. You should have thought about it in advance. This is what's going to happen. This is the family she comes from. This is the family she sends her son Jacob back to. And in the storm, the very active, young, active woman that we saw eventually ends up and vanishes from the Tanakh, I would say in the same storm that she came to. Thank you. Very much. And next week, we will see Yaakov and Esav, and we'll continue. Zad Hashem, I'll feel better. And we'll continue with our series, Yaakov and Esav, and then Yosef. I'm here for questions. Yes, Ricky. To say. So, first of all, it's important to say, Yitzchak is a worthy character. Yitzchak is a worthy character in a way that, first of all, from last week, if you remember, we said that he was very old in the story of his binding. He agreed by himself to lift himself on the altar, to sacrifice himself to God. Okay, he had the character. It's not that he does it, he's not such an indifferent person that has no character and is very naive. No, he has a character, and he has his ofi, as we say in Hebrew. He has his ofi and his teva, his nature. Just, I think, that only by the scope of the story between of Rivka and Yitzchak, the Torah paints it. It's an art. It's a painting. It paints it that way that the colors of Rivka are way more, I would say, highlighted, way more strong. They're stronger than the colors the Torah paints Yitzchak's character. I'm not sure that Yitzchak doesn't have character, and he has, and the Midrashim are telling us, not only that, but the fact that, you know, after Avraham Avinu, which was such a huge character, maybe that's the time to have someone who's more solid. He's digging, Abraham is planting, he is digging. There is a difference between digging wells and planting trees. Abraham planted trees, he's digging wells. Think about insight that you can bring by comparing trees and wells. He's digging downside, he's growing up. There's many things we can think of, and the Midrashim and our commentators say a lot of insights about Yitzchak's character. But I do think that within the scope of the stories between Yitzchak and Rivka, the painting, the colors that the Torah paints Rivka's character are way stronger than the colors of Yitzchak's character. It doesn't say that Yitzchak doesn't have a character. It just says that in those stories, this is how the Torah wants us to understand it.
So, does part of Yitzchak's strength come out